He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Got some calls already. It's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. What's on your mind? Maybe something's on your mind that's not on my mind. Jay, what's up? What are you calling about?
Hey, Geraldo, I love your show. Been listening to you from day one.
Appreciate that.
But when it comes to, like, black issues, it sounds like racist TV or racist radio when a lot of the callers call in and they're giving their, like, twisted points of view. If you have Tony Powell on from the Imus show, it would be pretty good, you know, to have some.
All right, so what's your take on this big thing in Oklahoma University?
It's messed up. I mean, what more could you say? You know,
if what does it reveal to you, Jay? Or if anything?
What'd you say?
What does it reveal to you, the fact that these frat boys were using the N-word in their ditty so casually?
Well, the way they were chanting so enthusiastic, like they were doing the national anthem, shows that racism still is pretty strong in this country. People don't talk about it, and that's how they think that it doesn't exist anymore, but it's out there, so that just showed it.
Well, do you ever use that kind of language in private when you're with your buddies in a drunken setting?
It's different. Again, the way you use the word is different. If, you know, if you're using it in a way in which you're saying that, you know, that you're going to hang people from trees and that nobody's going to be a part of your organization, that's not using it in a drunken, friendly way. You know?
I should say. So do you think they're racist or are they just college boys?
I think they're racist.
All right, Jay, I got it. Here, Ruben, what's up, Ruben? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, you were asking a question yesterday morning about race relations in America.
I was, and I am.
Yeah, and my response is, when you have a president where he's being openly and blatantly disrespected by everybody, members of Congress, everybody just openly disrespecting him, what do you expect is going to happen? The race relations are going to, he is not the reason. He is the reason, but he is not responsible for it.
You know, I hate to agree with you, Ruben, but I agree with you. Now, I don't know if it's racism. Well, here, let me take one more, and then I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking about today. Here's Mario. What's up, Mario?
Geraldo, I'll tell you where we learned all this. In the U.S. Congress, we have the Congressional Black Caucus, we have the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, but we don't have a Congressional White Caucus. What's that about?
I don't like self-segregation. I don't like it. Now, if a group like the Hispanic Congressional Caucus gets together because they want them to amalgamate their political clout to help other Latinos, whether it's in bilingual education or some kind of immigration reform, I understand that. But one of the things I really detest as an old style integrationist is when all the black kids sit at one table, all the Jewish kids sit at another table, the Italian kids and so forth and so on. I think that's very destructive. Ultimately, hang out with whoever you want to hang out with. I have no problem with that. But when you make it almost a requirement that you self-segregate that way, I don't think anybody is helped. All right, let me, I took the calls just because they were out. Well, I'll take one more. And I haven't really told you what I want to talk about today, but here's John in Brooklyn. What's up, John?
Geraldo, just quick on the race issue. I'm becoming desensitized to it.
How so? What's the matter?
I'm just tired of hearing about it. I mean, blacks are doing fine in America. But what I wanted to address was your post last night about marijuana legalization.
Right.
I'm sure your family's been touched by people that have OD'd either on Oxycontin or heroin. This is a major problem in our country right now.
You mean getting stoned?
Getting high, Geraldo. I mean, I grew up in the 70s. The message in our schools in the 70s was not to do weed because it was a gateway drug. Our kids are abusing alcohol in school. They're smoking weed, which is making them dumber than they already are. And it's just not a good message overall for the youth of America, Geraldo. They don't have this benefit that you want to give them.
But let me ask you this, John. First of all, what is your experience? You are calling because this has touched you in a personal way that you're not telling us, and I want you to tell us.
It's touching America.
Now, tell me about you. Forget about America, right?
I know. I had a family member who OD'd on Oxycontin. I have friends whose children live in nice areas. that are dabbling in heroin. And this is no joke. You know, the bipartisanship that the Congress showed for Israel, I would love to see a venue on stopping drugs coming into America.
And you don't make any distinction, John, between marijuana and these other drugs that you mentioned?
Didn't you grow up in the 70s with me, Geraldo?
I did. No. There was no OxyContin when I grew up.
Wait. But you remember the message of that marijuana is a gateway drug. Do you remember that?
I remember and reject it. I do not believe it. It hasn't led me to anything.
Can I get a little personal with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
We know you're a weed smoker. How do you think that's affected your life?
Now, how do you know, first of all, that I'm a weed smoker?
Because you said it 100 times that you like weed.
I tell you what I do like. I do like that marijuana prohibition is finally ending and we're not going to be a nation of hypocrites anymore because I don't know anybody who hasn't smoked dope with the exception of Bill O'Reilly. I swear to God, I don't know anybody. I don't know one person. I remember getting my father at the age of 70 stoned for the first time. I mean, it was, everybody has tried it. And then to make it a big, thanks for the call, John, and good luck to you. Make it a big crime that affects your whole life and wrecks everything. Then the judge goes home and takes a toke on his balcony.
And can I tell you something? I just finished doing this 3-part series here on ABC called Smack in the Suburbs.
I thought you were going to tell me you just got stoned.
That too. I did this 3-part series on Smack in the Suburbs. And
that's for real.
I talked to lots of mothers and who are dealing with this in the suburbs, like this guy just said. And the gateway drug to heroin and harder drugs was not weed. It was prescription pills. And with almost every one of these parents that I spoke to, it was really amazing. Ones who had kids that were injured during sports and then had to take some sort of painkiller. The minute some of those kids were off the painkillers, they reached out for something that would physically replace those painkillers. And what was that? That was heroin. Because heroin had the same high that those prescription pills did. So to suggest that weed takes you from there to heroin, there's nothing to suggest that's accurate.
I think weed is the best drug available anyway. Let me just tell you a quick story. When my foot got screwed up in the botched surgery at the Hospital for Special Surgery and left me in pain and crippled, they gave me these drugs. OxyContin. A whole big
vat of it. An intense drug.
And so I figured out in the first day that this was going nowhere. That, first of all, my foot wasn't going to get better. And if I didn't learn to live with the pain, I was going to be a junkie. So I didn't use them even one day. Past the first day after, and I stopped using them right away. And I had the pills in my little cubbyhole where I keep all my private stuff at the house in Edgewater. So one day I come home. I'm just like doing an inventory. It's gone. It's absolutely gone.
No.
So now I start turning everything over. Where the hell are these pills? So it turns out that the guy that worked for me at the time, the guy who was in charge of the compound there and taking care of the boat and everything, was a junkie in the past. He had leveled off. I don't know what he was doing messing around, but he stole them. And so they were gone. What happened to him was he went right from there to being a junkie. He was highballing heroin and cocaine, became a thief, robbed me, robbed our neighbors, robbed everybody, robbed the penny jar of our neighbors down the street. Ultimately was sent to lockdown rehab. We could have charged him with 1 million felonies, but chose not to. My point is, I think it was those prescription pills, and that's why I think you're absolutely right. That is the gateway to these illicit hard drugs. Marijuana is as analogous to alcohol as anything that I can think of. And it is less, as in the president's own words, it is less harmful than alcohol. To keep it illegal is to generate generations of disrespect for the law. Because you know what you're doing is illegal, and yet you know it's harmless because you are perfectly functional. People get stoned every day, go to work, or they get stoned after they come home from work, whatever it is. They're not like the junkie shooting up in the corner. And to pretend that marijuana should still be a Schedule I narcotic is absolutely bizarrely disconnected from real life. And that's why I salute Rand Paul. Rand Paul is a libertarian in the old school sense. He wants the government to butt out. And the fact that he has joined forces with Kristen Gillibrand and
Cory Booker.
And Cory Booker of New Jersey finally doing something is, I think, a great sign that prohibition is ending, that hypocrisy is ending. And when I made that post last night to give kudos to those three senators, I meant it. Now, for me to sit behind the microphone and talk about my own marijuana use, why is that useful? Because then that becomes like the story. You know, is he stoned now or what's this or that? I've never been stoned on the air. Never. Not one time.
Well, didn't you do it once as a piece? You got stoned on the air.
I was filmed. Thank you for fact checking.
Sure.
And I didn't even want to talk about this today, but I follow your lead, ladies and gentlemen. If you let me be your guide through the militant middleman's position on some of these issues. But I have to talk about Hillary and the emails, and I have to talk about this act of these 47 senators sending this this note to the mullah in Iran. And I just want to ask you, how would you feel, you Republicans out there, if the Democrats had sent a note like that to Saddam Hussein and totally undermined whatever negotiations were going on? I mean, is this the way we're going to do business now, where each faction in the Congress of the United States can deal with foreign leaders on their own? If you're not worried about this, then don't tell me that you are a patriot. There's a million things to talk about today, obviously. Phone's ringing already, 866-ARALDO, 866-437-2536.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I'm going to get to your calls momentarily, and I appreciate them. I appreciate how feisty everybody is so early in the morning. I have to just tell you, though, I am enormously encouraged by the progress of the Iraqi security forces in the battle against ISIS, even without American air power. But ironically, with the Iranian generals apparently in control, they've taken the outskirts of Tikrit in Iraq from ISIS. That's Saddam Hussein's hometown. I have to tell you, Noam, that although it was in many ways the most challenging physically and emotionally assignment I ever had, I look back with some fondness over the long days and weeks we spent in Iraq between 2003 and 2011. We were in Tikrit, Saddam Hussein's hometown, shortly after he was captured. That's where I met Ray Odierno. He only had two stars then. Now he is the chief of staff of the United States Army. He's a four-star general. He's from New Jersey. Great guy. But what I was remembering was actually going on the Tigris River, you know, the Tigris and Euphrates, these historic rivers that they come out of the mountains of Turkey. They go through Iraq, and that's what fueled civilization itself, Mesopotamia, in that region. That's why it's so troubling to see ISIS, these savages, destroying archaeological sites that date back 3,000, 4,000 years. But I remember so vividly being on the Tigris River in a small boat with a machine gun mounted on the prow and just patrolling that river. It was just so to think that, you know, people in these papyrus boats or whatever balsa boats back, you know, millennia ago applied that same waterway. It was quite an amazing experience. And, you know, I really cheer on the Iraqis. If the Iranians are leading them, so be it. If we're, you know, so wishy-washy about our commitment to the fight against ISIS, then better the Iranians than ISIS. But I want the president to just wake up and get involved. I see General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, is making some statements about coordinating the big push on the city of Mosul. The city in northern Iraq, which is the biggest of all the prizes captured by ISIS, you know, so I want very much for them to be pounded into the ground. I want to go somebody calls. Let me go Gary in Brooklyn. What's on your mind, Gary? What are you thinking about?
Good morning, Geraldo. I just wanted to jump in on the drug commentary you were talking about.
Sure.
I'm in long-term recovery myself. I've been clean over 7.5 years. Now, I know everybody's different. I mean, you could say that smoking marijuana wouldn't lead to harder drugs. But, I mean, why risk it?
But why keep it illegal, though, Gary? I mean, that's the point. If people can't control their alcoholism, prohibition, we tried it. And now with people feeling, people have grown up. And now our adults, 30, 40, 50 years old, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, it's time to stop the hypocrisy. That's what it's about. Eddie in Staten Island, what's up, Eddie?
Oh, the only problem with legalizing marijuana is the government's going to get their hands into it and they're going to ruin it. Because let me tell you, this is the greatest country in the world, but the government sucks. I could show you an honest politician, but he's marked with a headstone. That's what's wrong with this country today.
All right, Eddie, I got it. I wonder if congressmen who smoke dope, and I bet they have the same percentage as anyone else, I wonder if they're better or inferior legislators.
They're probably more mellow.
More mellow. There was no mellowness shown, and this is what I will address, finally, when we come back after Noam's newscast. The New York Daily News today called the 47 senators who sent that note to Iran traitors. Are they traitors?
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
This is never going to end. We've lived with this for 20 years. We'll live with it for the rest of the campaign. It's all about nothing. That's my view of the whole thing.
That's James Carville, longtime Clinton supporter, talking about Hillary Clinton's current flap. And today is, ladies and gentlemen, a big day in presidential politics. Welcome back to 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo along with Noam Layden. Kind of just open the phone lines right from the get-go. People very eager to voice their opinion about the great events of the day. One of them today will be finding out whether or not President Hillary is really inevitable, or at the very least, whether or not she's the inevitable Democratic nominee. She's got this speech that Noam referenced scheduled for 1:30 this afternoon. She's keynoting, it's a friendly turf there. She's at the United Nations keynoting this Women's Empowerment Principles Conference. But then she's expected to take questions, right, bud?
She is. She's going to make some sort of opening statement after this speech. And then, whatever reporters are in the room, and I imagine there'll be a lot of them, will fire away.
And the question they'll be firing will be about this private email controversy. You've got all kinds of opinions about it. I think that if the explanation is that she's got them and they are retrievable and it wasn't against the law at the time she, inventoried them in the way that she did, then she'll be okay. If she can't find them, I think that, and therein lies the problem. There is this incipient distrust of the Clintons that is almost in the DNA of at least half this country. They just don't trust the Clintons after the president lied about sex. I mean, maybe it's just as simple as that, but they always have had this kind of secretive aspect to them. And if indeed this distrust is justified by the facts in this case, and she did indeed communicate privately to keep it out of the system of checks and balances and government inventory of the history of government, and she did it to cover something up, then I think she's in real trouble. But I believe that if in her speech today she says, Noam, that anything I ever wrote is right here and you could find it by using this code and there it is and I did nothing secret and I communicate with the president this way and then it'll be the end. It'll be on to the next country.
But aren't there senators, congressmen who are making this accusation, have been for the last couple of weeks, that there are these missing emails already into their investigation into the whole Benghazi scandal?
You're talking about when she's on the BlackBerry, the famous picture of her with the sunglasses on, and they don't have any emails from that particular day.
They claim there's a large gap, and whether it's true or not, I don't know.
Well,
but they claim there's a gap, and if there's, where are those emails?
The facts are what the facts are, dude. I'm not defending her, and I'm not attacking her. I'm just saying that if these emails are retrievable, and Trey Gowdy, the head of this House Select Committee on Witch Hunting in Benghazi, wants them and he has a lawful subpoena for them, then he should get them. And if she can't produce them because they have been destroyed, then I think she's in hot water. And I think that this whole, going back to my major point, this whole inevitability aura of her as the candidate of the Democrats and as the eventual 45th president, I think will be dissipated. She'll have a real struggle. She'll get the nomination. But, you know, people will look at her and say, what other secrets does she have?
Well, that, or you can look and see that all the polling has been done in the last 24, 48 hours, say most Americans aren't paying attention, don't really care.
In Virginia. Interesting. All right, Dave's on the line. What's up, Dave? What are you thinking about?
I can't wait to see Hillary lie through her teeth at this press conference. She's up to her neck and no good. She's nothing more than a money-grubbing person that used her position at the State Department to fly around the world and take money from countries that oppress women. And think about this, Geraldo.
Well, that's a, see, hold on that point before we go into your major payoff there, Dave. I think that scandal has more legs than the private email scandal. If the Clinton Foundation is speaking through one side of its mouth, women's rights, women's empowerment today at the United Nations, and on the other hand, taking money from countries that impose Sharia law, for instance, or in some other ways oppress women, I think that therein lies a much more fundamental problem with whatever's going on. But I tell you this. So if the explanation doesn't fit, you can't acquit. Okay, let's move on from there. Because I'm so irked, and I haven't been able, because there's been so many calls, to fully express my absolute dismay, bordering on disgust. It's one thing when the House Republicans go off on some Daryl Issa-inspired, I use the expression witch hunt, but I'll use it again, where the bluster has no relation with the reality. And I could name them. I don't want to go fight you about the Fast and Furious and all the rest of the IRS and all the rest of that. But the situation here involves the Senate of the United States, not the House. And it's not one or two Republican senators. It's almost all Republican Senate. It's 47 of the 50, whatever they got. And they, in my view, put their party ahead of their country by becoming pen pals with the mullahs in Iran. They told our enemies, 47 Republican senators told our enemies, if Iran is indeed our enemy, not to have any faith in our president. And I mentioned in past, imagine if the Democrats had done that, sent a note to Saddam Hussein not to believe anything that George W. Bush has to say to you. You know, we have one caller alluded to the fact, was this racism? I don't even go there. You don't have to go there. But to first invite Bibi Netanyahu to the Senate, to the joint session of Congress, to humiliate the president in that regard by dictating U.S. foreign policy and telling us who our main enemy is in the Middle East, and to do it in a way that was, I think, flagrantly violation of protocol, to say the least, aside from mucking up the negotiations with Iran about the nukes, to now again attempt to totally bypass the executive branch of government, to communicate directly with the foreign government, you bypass the president, you communicate directly to Iran. And so the Daily News has some colorful headlines from time to time, but they are not a radical, raggy newspaper. The Daily News is a pretty solid publication. And for them to call this an act of treason, this sending the note directly to Iran, these Republican senators sending this note to Iran, that's a big deal. And to call the senators who signed that note traitors, I mean, I'm not going that far, but it is an outrageous insult, not only to the White House, but to the Constitution itself. Those people, those senators, all of whom, or a good hunk of them, complained so bitterly when President Obama used his executive authority to defer deportation of immigrants. They said that he was violating the separation of powers. For them to do this, I talked about hypocrisy regarding marijuana. This is such glaring ideological hypocrisy. It makes me gag. No, I'm telling you. They're sending notes to Iran. Don't believe anything our president says. What the hell? What the? Are you kidding me? You're sending notes to Iran saying don't believe our president? I mean, where does this come from? From where springs this audacity to absolutely circumvent or attempt to circumvent and undermine your president? Why are they doing it? Because he's a Democrat? Because Bibi Netanyahu told them to do it? Man, I'm telling you, this is low. This is really low. This is what's next. What's next? He's going to have a state visit and they're going to slip the visiting dignitary a note that says, don't stand too close to him. We don't like him. We don't dig this guy. Don't listen to a word he says. We're going to be in trade negotiations or whatever. And some faction of the Senate or the House is going to send a note to the nation that, I mean, it is so beyond the pale. I mean, it really shows you if Hillary's email controversy can be so overwhelmed in the news that it's on like on page 16 now, even though she's going to speak about it today, you see how self-defeating this note by the Republicans is. They have shown themselves to be irrational and irresponsible in power. And they're going to blow the 2016 presidential race by being divided against themselves and going with the most radical amongst them. This is shameful. You know, the Iranian president there, Zarif, he calls it unprecedented and undiplomatic and a propaganda ploy. Duh, at least. He's understating what it is. It is a flagrant insult to the Constitution of the United States of America, and you cannot abide it, ladies and gentlemen. Republican or Democrat, you cannot abide it. Because once you let them do it, then when the other side gets the shot and they do it, and they won't be able to trust America anymore, our word, we're negotiating now, and you got China involved, and Russia involved, and France involved, and Britain involved, and we're negotiating. And now everybody at that conference in Switzerland negotiating the nukes, they know that John Kerry, the Secretary of State of the United States, only speaks for like half of America. I mean, is that the way we're going to do business now? Half of America? So you got half of America is going to be for this guy. Half of America is going to be for that guy or girl. I mean, it is really dangerous and it is embarrassing and shame on them. I'm not calling them traitors like the Daily News did, but this is a shameful act. Maybe they should all get stoned. Those guys
should go back. That might help the situation a little bit. They chill out a little bit. Jeez.
All right, your calls are next. Seriously, 866-ERALDO, 866-437-2536. Give me a minute. We'll be back.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
5 minutes to 11 o'clock. I'm going to get to your calls momentarily. Just to permit me this one note about the battle going on for Tikrit right now, the hometown of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. There are no, as far as I know, at last report, there was no U.S. air power involved in that battle. And I was baffled, and I am baffled, why the Obama administration, saying they want to destroy ISIS, has been so tepid in terms of the military response. This is a classic example. Now, the Iraqi forces are hitting Tikrit. They're hitting Tikrit from the south, from the Baghdad area. So here you have this large-scale Iraqi offensive. They're hitting the city of Tikrit. You know what's going to happen? I'll tell you, it's just like Kobani, that city in Syria where there was the siege. ultimately, ISIS is going to retreat. They're going to retreat from Tikrit up toward Mosul. They're gonna leave Tikrit. They're gonna sneak out of Tikrit. This is when we should kill them. This is when air power should turn their defeat into a rout. This is to win a war. To win a war, you don't have to be General Patton to know that once you got them on the run, you've got to pound them. That's why we had cavalry in the old days. That's why we have Apache helicopters and A-10 close-in air support and some of these other magnificent war machines. Now we have to engage ISIS to defeat ISIS. And I just don't understand how the president of the United States can speak out of one side of his mouth and say, we want to destroy ISIS. And on the other side, we'll get to it. It just doesn't compute.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We're talking pot legalization, or at least the medical marijuana side of it at the federal level. Three senators, two of them locals, introducing a bill to make medical marijuana legally available everywhere. Hillary's emails, we'll find out whether she has a legit explanation for having this private email system in her home. Did she destroy those communications? Is she covering something up? We'll have more answers. She speaks at 1:30. So keep tuned to 77 WABC to find out whether the former First Lady, Secretary of State, Senator from the great state of New York can explain why she set up this whole cyber system on her own. And then the GOP love letter to Iran really irking me today. I'll take your calls at 866 Geraldo in the order they came in. Ralph, thank you for hanging on. What's on your mind, bud?
Well, I will tell you, Geraldo, you mentioned before that you haven't met anyone that hasn't smoked pot. I've never smoked. I disdain it. I despise it. But there again, I don't want to criminalize it. I don't want people sitting in jail because of a stupid pot charge, which is the case in many, many, many times when these.
So how do you get high? I mean, how do you relax? Or do you just like get into like a zen state? How do you, Ralph? What's your recreation? What's your guilty pleasure?
I exercise. I have sex, but I don't smoke. I don't smoke pot. It's just not my thing, Geraldo. But here's the thing.
Are you a drinker?
No, I never drank in my life. Never tasted alcohol.
Wow, interesting, interesting.
But when I walk
so with whom do you
street,
have sex? No, I don't care.
another phone call. I'll let you know.
All right, call me on my private line. All right, what's on your mind?
When I walk down the street, Geraldo, and I get the smell of the smoke with anything that intrudes upon my lifestyle, I resent.
Oh, I hate cigarettes, man.
Yeah, when I walk down 9th Avenue or something thereabouts, I'm getting this smell of smoke that I never got before. I cannot tell you how it turns me off and it intrudes upon my day. But there again, I have to mention, Geraldo, so you have me straight. I don't want a cat sitting in jail on a stupid
pot charge. Gotcha. That's
sitting
fair.
There rotting away.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Fair assessment. And I appreciate Cole. Hey, Paul in Queens, what's up, man?
Hey, Geraldo. The thing about the GOP sending a letter to Iran. You
right.
think it's wrong?
I think what?
You think it's wrong?
I think it's horrible.
Well, let me explain.
I think that Netanyahu speaking at the joint session of Congress was terrible also.
Well,
I think that it was a campaign ploy,
humiliated
the president. He's dictating U.S. foreign policy. Give me a break.
Let me give you 3 points quick then. Let me explain. Number one, Israel is our ally. They're right next to Iran. They're going to get blown up.
They're not right next to Iran.
Right?
There's Iraq in between, but go ahead.
Right. Well, they're fighting a war. They might want to take Iraq if they feel like it. Number two, there's Lady Rahman. You should speak about the opposition groups that can't stay in Iraq because they'll get killed. When Obama became president, Nader in the Green Revolution got shot in the heart. That's when the first year, 2008, when he became president. And he didn't ever speak up to the revolutionary people got killed. So let me ask you a question. When apartheid started and nobody spoke up, but you have people from Congress speak up about apartheid. So let me ask you a question. When Iran wants to kill gays, which Ahmadinejad said they weren't okay because they kill them, and then they prosecute women, they shoot women, and then you can't tell
you
me
you know what I would have done? You know what I would have done? You got Netanyahu. I got you. I got Netanyahu going to Congress. When was the last time Netanyahu mentioned Palestine? You want to talk about what's next door to Israel? Talk about Palestine. Talk about the continued spread of Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. You want to talk about a problem? You want to talk about an issue that Netanyahu should be addressing? How about that issue? And he was quoted, he was heard in some speech recently saying that he doesn't believe in the two-state solution, even though in 2009 he made a speech that said he believed in it. When was the last time Netanyahu mentioned Palestine? Before he's talking about Iran and what the United States should or shouldn't do, don't you think that he should address some of the problems in his own country? And don't you see this as a absolute diversion from the real issue? What's the single most destabilizing long-term issue in the Middle East? Going on 50 years now. Palestine. Let Netanyahu deal with that. Deal with the Jewish settlers instead of trying to court their vote by being more right-wing than the right-wing. I have no patience for it. You got to see things for what they are. Don't be snowed. Don't be bowled over by anybody, left, right. Don't let them give you a con job. You know, watch my left hand when my right hand is stealing your wallet or whatever it's doing. It's infuriating to me. It really is. And how we go, it's so gullible. So gullible. I mean, this letter to the Iranian leadership under our constitutional form of government, we have to remind you that this or that. What is that? What is that? Ross in Long Island. Hey, Ross, thanks for calling 866-ARALDO. Appreciate it.
Hey, Araldo, how are you today?
All right, I'm good.
Good. Real just quick, on this whole issue with the senators, I agree that it's wrong for them to have sent the letter, but Obama has fomented such a toxic environment with passing Obamacare without bipartisan support, all the actions he's done to unilateral changes to Obamacare, the act on the Dreamers and on immigration, and foreign policy debacles, and lastly, he's intimated that he's not going to seek any congressional input on this deal over a nuclear bomb with Iran, and he is just it's just a lack of leadership on his part that has caused a majority of these problems.
So you think, but all right, I hear you, and I understand your displeasure with the president. Do you think the remedy, though, Ross, do you think the way to alleviate some of these actions that the president is doing is for the Senate Republican caucus to communicate directly with the foreign leader? Do you think that that's appropriate?
It's a bad precedent, and I'm a Republican, so I don't think I like the measure, but I'm just saying that things have become so dire and toxic, it's frightening, but he is just not a leader.
All right, I hear you. Those could be separate issues, though. I got you. Here is Harold in the Upper East Side. What's up, Harold?
I find you totally naive today. You're criticizing the senators for writing a letter, but yet you forget when your girl, the one who you admire, Nancy Pelosi, just 8 short years ago, went against White House instructions over to Syria to sit down with the enemies, Assad, and then tried to negotiate for Israel without even having their permission to. And if you want to remember, we don't even have any diplomatic negotiations there. But, oh, geez, that's fine and dandy with you. But you criticize and practically call the senators, the 47 of them, treasoners, okay, for writing a letter. Come on, get off your high horse. You've got to start to realize that politics is a freaking game. What goes around comes around. And for you to get all hoity-toity up in the air about this, you're just hypocritical, totally hypocritical.
Harold, thank you for that. Reminder, I don't know anything. Did Nancy Pelosi go to Syria 8 years ago?
She did, 2007.
And what did she do?
It was I just remember John Boehner, you know, yelling out that he was upset about this, but she went there to negotiate with the Syrians.
And what was the issue? I mean, this is pre-Civil War because it's pre-Arab Spring. So anyway, you'll find out.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I just remember he's correct. It was 2007.
It was pre-Syrian Civil War.
Yes, it was.
All right, so we'll find out where it is. Anyway, it was, you know, Harold had, I admire his feistiness. And I say again to the smartest audience in Radio Land that everyone is welcome here. But I utterly reject any attempt to legitimize this flagrant abuse and avoidance of the separation of powers in the United States and how we do things. I didn't call the GOP senators traitors. The Daily News did on the front page today. I think what they did was reckless, partisan politics that can't help the United States of America. It is absolutely beyond the pale. I don't know what Nancy Pelosi did. I'm going to check.
2007, I can tell you, actually. Okay. She went to Syria to meet Nancy Pelosi went to Syria to meet with Bashar al-Assad. And
the president of Syria.
That's right. And she tried to get them to negotiate with Israel, to open up peace talks with Israel. And what Ehud Olmert, who was the prime minister of the time of Israel, said is that he had never been consulted about her meetings with Bashar al-Assad and did not want to open any sort of peace talks with Syria. But that's what she was there for. And apparently she went there over the objections of the White House.
Did she?
Yeah.
All right, Harold, Nancy Pelosi's sin does not forgive the sin of the Republican senators. I think that both were wrong. But thank you for that historic example. And Noam, for your quick research. Steve in Beacon. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Geraldo. How you doing?
Good, man.
Well, I was going to bring up that point about Nancy Pelosi earlier myself, but I'm glad you guys covered it. But the point with Obama on Face the Nation this past Sunday, I mean, once again, showing his ineptitude, saying that he first heard about Hillary having her own email on the news like everyone else. I fail to think that he did not email his Secretary of State for the 4 years that she was in that position and didn't notice that he was sending it to a different type of email than everybody else in his cabinet and administration uses. I mean, he'll show his grasp of the bracketology come this month with March Madness.
All right, here's what. Did I play Josh Earnest on the president on Hillary's email?
The president, as I think many people expected, did over the course of his first several years in office trade emails with his Secretary of State. The point that the president was making is not that he didn't know Secretary Clinton's email address. He did. But he was not aware of the details of how that email address and that server had been set up, or how Secretary Clinton and her team were planning to comply with the Federal Records Act.
All right, so did they comply with the Federal Records Act or not? That's the issue.
Exactly, and the point is, this is supposed to be the smartest president that we've ever had the luck to have, and here he is not even realizing that someone that's a top dog in his administration is not using the government email process that everyone is required to use.
I got it, Steve. I got it. And the issue will be, as I've been talking all morning, did she or did she not comply with the Federal Records Act? In the sense that, are those emails retrievable? Are they safeguarded? Can her opponents access them within the confines of the various security constraints? And those questions, presumably she'll answer, and she'll have an answer that is appropriate or not.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
27 minutes after 11 o'clock here on 77 WABC. George in New York, you're on the 866 Geraldo hotline. What's up?
Hey, Geraldo, how you doing over there?
Pretty good, man.
Yeah, you know, I've never been on talk radio. I'll make it short. Very proud that you still have the guts after all these years from the Willowbrook stuff to say what you just said about Yahoo, because I know you work for Fox and you're around Bill Riley and all those things. So bravo to you, man. You still have those guts.
Wait, it's a hard row to hoe, but I say what I think, what I feel. You know, I'm not always right, and I'm totally open to the fact that on many issues, like immigration, I'm in the minority. It doesn't make you wrong, doesn't make me wrong, but I understand that I'm in the minority. The same thing about support for Israel. I think that support for Israel, while it's a central tenet in my life, it's not without questioning. And I think that what Bibi did was out of line. I think what these Republican senators did was out of line. I think what Nancy Pelosi did in 2007, I don't know all the details, but that was out of line. That was out of line. I voted for George Bush in 2004. I remind everybody. Okay, Oyster Bay, John's on the line. What's up, John?
Hello, Geraldo. Well, I have to hand it to you today. I think you're batting 1,000. I think you are 100% wrong on every single issue you talked about.
Well, good. So we got that straight.
At least you're perfect.
Well, which one do you want to tackle, John?
Well, I originally called about the drugs. I think you got some misinformation there. But I think more important, I voted for Bush also. But if he was about to hand Iran the bomb and the Democrat Senate wrote him a letter, I'd say, screw protocol. This is too important. The man.
And then where do you get your facts from? From where do you get your facts that we're going to hand Iran the bomb?
Read the agreement.
Do you think the president is that disloyal to his country that he wants to give a bomb to a rogue regime?
He's not disloyal. I think he means well, but he is so desperate to be the peacemaker, and he doesn't understand the people and the culture that he's dealing with.
Well, at least you think he means well. I think that's...
Listen to some of the Iranian broadcasts, Geraldo. They are laughing at us over there.
Well, I tell you, I am not laughing. I don't care what Iran is doing. I'm not laughing. What are you going to now have the Democrats in the state assembly? They'll be conducting their own foreign policy. Joe in Queens, what's up, Joe?
Hey, Geraldo, thanks for taking my call. I got to tell you, I'm so glad Harold gave you a good scolding. In regards to Iran.
If you go off, and I'm a polite person, you know, and you could go, you can just, what are you going to do? You're going to score some big points?
I want to tell you, and on most of the issues we're talking about here today, there's that one nagging thing that a lot of liberals, they just can't get around, and especially this president, and it's called the United States Constitution. Okay? And thank God.
Are you going to use a constitutional argument to?
Yes.
Because to say that the senators did the right thing?
Thank God that there's senators in Congress that are willing to put this guy in check.
They put their party before their country. Baloney. It's bogus.
The right to circumvent
bogus.
The Constitution.
It's nothing to do. You see, that 47 senators believe that Iran is this existential threat, and the other 53 senators are completely ignorant of that fact. Everyone's got their opinions, but you got to go. I mean, if you want to make a speech on the floor of the United States Senate condemning the negotiations, do it. Don't communicate with the foreign leader.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Welcome back. 38 minutes after 11 o'clock. It's been a feisty day. Talking about pot legalization, talking about Hillary's private email system, talking about the Republican senator's love letter to Iran. I'm going to get to your calls momentarily at 866-HERALDO. Before I do, there's a group called Special Operations Speaks. It's co-founded by a colonel, a special ops colonel named Richard Brower. But they have a very interesting point of view. They want us to make war on ISIS, as the president has promised to do. But they want Congress to declare war on ISIS. I was thinking about that myself. I think they're absolutely right about that. I think that since the undeclared war in Vietnam, the precedent has been for the executive, who has enormous power, the president, to, in the case of Vietnam, to use various congressional proclamations or resolutions, Tonkin Bay and all the rest of it, So they use these vaguely worded congressional proclamations as the basis to wage war, which constitutionally is the function of the Congress of the United States. So we're talking about the Constitution here. So this group, the Special Operations Speaks, want the Congress to declare and design this war on ISIS. Certainly they should declare this war on ISIS. We want ISIS to be defeated. So this is a good job for Congress now. Let the president ask, have the courage to ask Congress, and have the Congress have the courage to declare war on ISIS. That's the way it should be done constitutionally. It hasn't been done that way in half a century. But that's the way we should move forward. If we're talking about adherence to the Constitution, and you hear my dismay and disdain for what these 47 Republican senators have done in communicating directly with Iran, then let's put the House back in order. Put the constitutional House back in order. Have the president request and have Congress declare war on ISIS. Then for goodness sake, let's wage that war. Let's wage that war to win it, to destroy this group. All right, so what's on your mind? I'll take it in the order they came in, starting with Bobby. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Geraldo, thanks for taking my call. I also like to talk about the letter from the GOP senators.
Okay.
And I, too, disagree with you. You know, the president, the office of president does, in fact, demand respect, but the person doesn't get respect automatically. And the same applies in business. I mean, it's not automatic. The person really has to earn it. And your reference to them either being out of step with the Constitution, I mean, can you honestly remember any president that was more out of step, if not having the level of contempt for our Constitution, as this president does?
Well, I understand that's the way you feel, Bobby. That's not the way I feel. I think that he's been pretty standard, pretty, you know, he's been just as wishy-washy constitutionally as the Republican that preceded him, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, remember Gulf War I, Gulf War II. Come on, they all have their issues with the Congress of the United States and the White House of the United States, depending on what political party they are. But this, I can't remember. They saying, you know, Harold scolding me because Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, went to Syria. You really think that that's comparable? Okay. I don't, but all right, say it's comparable. I wouldn't have liked that either if I had a radio show in 2007, which I did not. I don't think that that is the appropriate role. I mean, if a congressman or a senator wants to go to Syria or Israel or Ireland, they always go to Ireland, or Italy, they always go to Italy and New York State before they run for office. They do the three I's, Israel, Italy, and Ireland. You know, that's fine. Go on these trade missions, that's fine. Just don't go to do the business of the United States of America in terms of making foreign policy. And don't circumvent the president and undermine the president and humiliate the president. I mean, don't you get irked by that? I mean, honestly, even if you hate President Obama, I want you to cast your minds back to why the scenario that I laid out in Switzerland. So here's the guy from China, the guy from Russia, the foreign ministers of these countries, powerful countries, enemies of the United States. I mean, in very, you know, fundamental ways. Then our two allies, Britain and France. And you have the Secretary General of the United Nations there, or whoever is representing him. And the Secretary of State of the United States, John Kerry. Everybody's looking at John Kerry and saying, you know, who do you really represent? The Democrats? Are you Secretary of State, or are you Secretary of the Democratic State? Because she's certainly not Secretary of the Republican State, because we got a letter right here, 47 GOP senators saying, whatever happens, we're going to get last word. I mean, for what? Of course they do. You have to write it down for what reason, other than to undermine and embarrass the president? Here's Mark in Edison. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. I want to, with those 47 senators, I want to reluctantly agree with you.
About time. I don't even think I got an agreement from Noam Layden today.
Okay. I happen to be a very strong, I'll say, Republican supporter.
Good.
And it's obvious the two parties hate each other. But I am a little bit tired that both parties, it's like party first, country second.
And it's
I agree with that, and it's very deplorable. I absolutely agree with you.
And it's kind of like that, oh, good, Hillary made a mistake. Let's go get her. And it's kind of like she made a mistake. It happens. But, I mean, with the senators, it seems that Obama, to me, though, he does go out of his way to stick it in the eye of the Republicans. And unfortunately, being adults, we go out of our way to try and stick it back to them. And I disagree with that.
All right, good, good call. I appreciate it. I appreciate your sentiments. Hey, it's Dan in New Jersey. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, Geraldo, quickly, I agree with you on the letter, by the way.
Thank you.
Real quick point, though. What Hillary's going to say today is going to be like the old gangster movies where everybody in the room knows what she did and everybody knows everybody knows. And she's going to basically say, you can't pin nothing on me. I released everything. And nobody's going to press her, and that's going to be the end of that.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think she did? I'm curious, what do you think she's hiding?
I think she wanted to manage her emails so that anything that could jeopardize her future run for president can be held back. Let me give you an example.
Go ahead.
I know you're tired of Benghazi, but was there a policy put in place in their zeal to get rid of Gaddafi that maybe they buddied up with what they thought were moderate Muslims, who turned out to be not so moderate and ended up killing our ambassador? Is that a possibility, something like that?
Whether or not she did it or not, I think that's the possibility. But I think it's highly unlikely she would put something like that in an email, don't you? Like, who would she be writing to? You know, to the ambassador in Libya saying, let's team up with, and what's that group called? I forget the Al-Qaeda affiliate. I don't think that's the kind of thing she put in an email. I mean, she might put that, let's make sure that I don't know what you would put in an email. I'm trying to give you a farcical example, and I just don't even know what you would put in the email. I mean, my emails, the most embarrassing thing is when I write to my wife and say, oh, baby, wait until I get home. And I doubt if Hillary is writing about that, but I don't know. Who knows? We'll find out in an hour and 45 minutes, at least her explanation. I do believe that the caller is right, though, in the sense that Hillary as Secretary of State was really Hillary as presidential candidate for 2016. I mean, we all agree that she took that job with her eye on the big job that she's been running for president since she lost to Barack Obama in 2008. She's been running, and every move she's made since then has been in furtherance of that ultimate goal, delayed 8 years by the Obama insurgency, which of course succeeded in making him the 44th president of the United States. But I think it is entirely possible, indeed likely, that the reason she created this private email system was precisely, as the caller suggests, to control all the data having to do with her professional performance with the eye toward the run for the White House, where something, however insignificant, might have in the wrong hands been embarrassing to her. I think that's entirely possible. Why else would she create a private email system? I mean, other than to control the data. My issue isn't her motive, though. My issue is whether she broke the law. And the laws that existed allowed a private email system to be set up so long as the emails were preserved. And that, I think, is where the rubber meets the road in this case. And we'll find out whether or not she can access, or her enemies can access that material. But, one other thing I'll tell you about as a lawyer. You can't subpoena just the sky. You can't say, I want all your emails that you ever sent. That's a fishing expedition. The law doesn't permit it. But if you had a date certain and a topic that you thought relevant, you can design a subpoena that's legal. And now let's see if she can comply or has been complying with those, because you can't lie to Congress. You can't obfuscate. You can delay. You can complain. But ultimately, you have to yield. Look at the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, getting in a jam and being held in contempt of Congress for that cockamamie Fast and Furious pseudo-scandal.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
I just have a couple of minutes. 5 minutes right now before high noon. But I don't mean to dwell on it. But I have to go back to the battle for Tikrit right now. And they're attacking from the south. When ISIS decides to give up in Tikrit, they're going to retreat to the north. And we're going to let them go. And then you're just going to have to fight those same fighters again in Mosul, the next city down the line. Why we don't have a coordinated strategy for dealing not just with this battle, but with this war. The war against ISIS. I don't know. And it baffles me. It just seems, because I know so many of the commanders, and they are so fine, the American battle-hardened commanders that I spent so much time with in Afghanistan and in Iraq. They know how to win the fight. But it just seems so half-assed to me, the way the White House is going about it. It's just really irksome because it seems unprofessional. Like this Iraqi attack on Tikrit. I bet they don't have any flanking movements. They have no plan to cut off the retreating enemy. And if I was the ISIS commander now, I would abandon that town, sneak around the Iraqi army and attack behind them. Because they're so unprofessional. We need to declare war on ISIS. I love you. Thanks for your calls. See you tomorrow.